Off the Ball, GAA.
You would have associated Cork with small, nippy players. That seems to be changed now to big, nippy players.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the Ball's Breakfast Bite. A bite-sized serving of Ireland's breakfast sports show.
Graham Hunter, good morning to you. How are you?
Sure, baby. How are you?
Look. Sure. You know, it's good to dream, Graham. As a Villa fan, we were dreaming pre-kickoff and then 3 or 4 minutes in, you're like, uh-oh.
You live to fight another day, right? You live to fight another day.
Only just.
Yeah.
Easy, calm, calm. But listen, you forgot to prepare a question. Will you leave the man alone and stop poking the bear? Only just. Come on.
Oh, you think they have a chance in the second leg at Villa Park?
That it, not only isn't that what I said, but I'm desperate. I and my close colleagues are desperate. We're desperate that Paris Saint-Germain goes through and that Lucien Riquet streaks on. It hasn't been shown in Ireland, but we spent 18 months filming with Lucien Riquet to make the documentary Not a Nice Ni Puta Idea, which is a phrase I can't fully use on the air, even in your liberal show. Where the message is, Lucien Riquet saying to all the journalists out there, you've got no effing clue. And we spent 18 months with him in his office, in his various houses, on the training ground, in the sauna with him, in the plunge pool, in the bedroom, in the training ground at Poissy near Paris. 3 episodes of the most coruscating, demanding, talented, exhilarating man I've ever worked around. And we'd like to make a 4th episode. We're chatting to him about that now. And with the people that we're talking to that might potentially show this, you know, we need them to go through against Villa. So absolutely no harm, Ger. Real deep apologies. But also, when you look at Paris Saint-Germain right now, let's be clear, I've only seen the highlights because I was working at Barcelona for Dortmund nil last night. The stubbornness now of the defence that he's built, particularly with Pacho on form and Donnarumma, a lighter physically guy, he gets around his goal better now. And Ashraf is just a modern phenomenon. When they're solid at the back, if you think about Kvaratskhelia and Doué and Barcola, if I'm not mistaken, starting the bench, the best form of Dembélé ever. You've got Gonzalo Ramos to come on if you need to. You've got Nuno Mendes and Vitinha and Neves. They've built an extraordinary outfit there. And I'm particularly since the Liverpool game, which I'm not carping about because I don't expect everyday people in the UK or Ireland to be going, I need to follow Paris Saint-Germain or Barcelona or Real Madrid or Villarreal intimately every day. So fine, it takes big events, seismic events. But since the win at Anfield, I've been noticing 2 things. One, a deeper appreciation for Luis Enrique and his life and what he's superseded, what it's done to him, that tragic loss of his 9-year-old daughter and how it's formed his vocabulary and his behaviour, and a deeper appreciation of the way that Paris Saint-Germain are playing right now. And if I'm honest, I think that they're big favourites and still my favourites to win their first ever treble on what would be Luis Enrique's 2nd treble. It's not done, it's not in the bag yet, but he would become the only coach in history to win 2 trebles and each of them at different clubs.
There is a massive prize there, but I think the other thing that's happened is that it's been a season of a bit of a turnaround because they weren't amazing in the early stages of the Champions League. And it's clear from the work ethic of the forward players that defensive mindset isn't just for the defenders, that actually the players he signed are tracking back, are pressuring. And last point on this is the press last night was insane.
You said it right, but you maybe even did them a favour because I watched intently the first trophy of the season, which is their Super Cup. I think it's called Trophée des Champions, which they put against Monaco in January, and they were turgid. Now, I put that down to, so as recently as that, you highlighted immediately the fact that in the league stage, and it happened to be that when on the day of the draw, we were out at his house near Barcelona before he went back to work, and he was irate. He thought the draw stank. If I'm honest, he never said, I think we're going out, this is trouble, but he knew on the day of the draw, that he absolutely knew that the period from then till January was going to be brutal.
This week on Diverted.
What have you heard about this festival?
That they fight each other, and some people in the past, they choose to die. So
you say that they choose to die?
Some of them, because for them it's not something bad. If somebody dies, for the whole community, it's like an offering for Pachamama. To say thank you for what they have in life, the products, all this stuff.
In episode 3, we're going to Bolivia. As soon as I get there, this cloud of white gas starts billowing towards me.
Tear gas.
Oh my God, I can actually feel it.
Go, guys.
Go.
Diverted. Coming every Tuesday to your podcast feed, wherever you get your podcasts. Tune in and get diverted.
On Off the Ball.
The championship is up and running properly. Neil Ewing is with us. We're going to have a podcast deep diving into the latter stages of the championship a little bit later on, with some interesting trends emerging. Neil, good morning to you. How are you?
Morning, Jared. Morning, Colin. How are things, guys?
There's been some wild games, which I think we haven't yet seen in the senior championship, because the evenly matched sides haven't played each other. Maybe maybe I'm doing a disservice to Wicklow Longford last weekend, but specifically last night, in the under 20 championship, I think the Sligo Leitrim game, it's fair to say, was wild. Is this something that we're going to see a bit more in the under 20 championship, do you think?
Yeah, the exuberance of youth, maybe. The scoreline in that Sligo and Leitrim game, it was just crazy. Sligo went well behind early on, came right back into it, went well ahead, and then in injury time they were hanging on. It was crazy stuff. But, you know, I did wonder following it, is it something that we might also see in club football as the year goes on as well? You know, we've seen a lot of the new rules at senior inter-county level, and it's got a lot of coverage. And by its very nature, senior inter-county level, there's a lot of analysis, a lot of preparation. So maybe some of the wild scores that we've seen at under 20 level might also be reflected at club level, where there's, you know, a slightly more laid back, not laid back, but slightly less detail in terms of the approach. But I also think probably with some of these under 20 teams as well, there is a lot of people involved in management teams who are conscious of developing players rather than developing systems, or been overly focused on systems. So, I think it's probably an endorsement of the scoring potential of the new rules, or maybe it shows some gaps in that games can fluctuate too much. And that's something I found even watching some of the league games this year at senior level as well, is, you know, you've played the game for years and you've been involved, you know, for so long in a game, and you look at a scoreline after 30 minutes, after 20 minutes, you have a feel for how the game is going, or, you know, who's on top. But with the new rules, you feel like you don't understand the game anymore to an extent, in that, you know, these 8, 10, 12 point leads do not mean anything like what they used to before.
I would personally like, from a TV perspective, Neil, is to illustrate somehow on the scoreboard how many 2 points have been scored, so you get a better context of where the game is at, because I think that's what's happening.
Definitely, Colm. I think that would be huge to see. And listen, if we're going to look for improvements that we can make as well, I got to be very, very ambitious and say I'd love to see even some little indicator of the wind direction and speed. And, you know, TG4 have been so innovative in their coverage of the National League. You know, you've seen their camera angles for the hurling game at the weekend. They're always improving. But I think, you know, you look at a score now, and if you see that big gap, even, I know it can't be 100% accurate, and this has, you know, been very ambitious, but could we have even some indication of, you know, what the wind speed is, what the wind direction is? Because with the two-pointers, you know, there's a double-edged sword on the two-pointers as well. The goalkeeper has to kick the ball back out to you, out to the middle of the field, and it's, you know, a lot closer to 50-50 now. So you can take speculative attempts at a two-pointer, and there's a good chance that you're going to get the ball back in the next 30 seconds to have another go at it. Mm-hmm. So I think the wind is having a big impact there. And yeah, definitely, I'd love to see the two-pointers pulled out of the scoreline so you can see it easily. And yeah, if we're going there, maybe something on the wind as well.
That feels a little bit like an aspect of this where there's a money ball element. You hit the shot, whether or not you score is less relevant than it used to be. Obviously, if you do score, suddenly you can rack up those. And, you know, there's a maybe a 90 seconds that we're going to see at some point in one of these games where somebody takes four shots, scores four, and it's an 8-point swing, but it's like literally four passages of play. We haven't yet seen any team embrace the "I'm going to go for it." There is probably room for some of these under 20 teams to try a little bit of that.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, it's a different game, obviously, but the principle remains. We've seen the Limerick hurlers over the last few years. They knew how strong they were on getting possession back from opposition puckouts, and they were just happy to shoot from distance repeatedly. And, you know, I think if you're playing with a breeze, if you have trust in your midfield, you know, if you have, and I guess it's about having the raw materials there around the middle of the park, there's a definite strategy there that you can have a go at, I think, in terms of being speculative with your 2-point efforts and just keep a team pinned in. If nothing else, it's going to be very hard for them to get down the pitch and attack. And yeah, it's the double score impact as well.
To listen to this morning's full Off the Ball breakfast, become a member at offtheball.com/join now.